This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Tim Temple is in the House, the insurance commissioner who won his election without opposition in 2023 after running a strong race against Jim Donilon 4 years earlier. People decided they wanted him as insurance commissioner because nobody showed up, and he was, of course, a formidable candidate, and many opted not to challenge him. So he has the job, and it's one of the toughest, a job without a lot of fanfare, usually a lot of criticism, and we'll talk with him about what's going on in his world. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. If you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Tim Temple, the National Hurricane Center, said this was going to be like the worst year ever for hurricanes. It hasn't been that way so far. Usually the last week of August, first week of September are the critical weeks for Louisiana, but I do see that there are five disturbances in the Atlantic that are being tracked, and we can never let our guard down.
No, we can't. You know, it only takes one. And we're certainly watching the weather and praying for a mild season. And I would just encourage everybody to remain vigilant and just keep your eye on the weather.
And you and your life have spent time all over Louisiana and some time in Lake Charles, and that city has yet to recover completely from what happened a few years ago.
Yeah, you know, Jim, I've actually been back to the Lake Charles region, I think it was four times over the last 4 weeks for various events. And one of those events was the Lake Charles Resiliency Conference. And they are leading the state in addressing resiliency. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we got to think about is that if you're insured, if your community is insured, then your community is going to be more resilient. And if your homes are more resilient, then your community is going to recover quicker. And it's something that we're looking at. You know, we've recently announced a change to the Fortified Roof Program. We're in discussions about trying to promote stronger, more stringent building codes to get to the Fortified Roof. Look, we're always going to be exposed to hurricane weathers. We need to do everything we can to mitigate damages, and a resilient, more fortified structure, home, property is one of the best ways to do that.
877-217-5757 is your number. And you mentioned the Fortified Roof Program. Louisiana's insurance department is making some changes to the program in a bid to accelerate the strengthening of homes most at risk from hurricanes as the insurance crisis plagues residents in our state. And the agency, and Mr. Temple is the one who's in charge, says it will launch the next round of $10,000 grants for residents to put stronger roofs on their homes by, Wednesday, September 18th. So you're a believer in this program. It does cost some, of course, some investment, but you believe the return is substantial.
Look, I very much believe in this program. And if you look at the other states that are the coastal states, you know, this started with Alabama over a decade ago. Florida has something similar. Texas has a similar type program where they required more stringent building codes on the coast. Louisiana passed their law, I can't think, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just this past legislative session for Mississippi, they did a fortified roof. So this is also one of those things where if you aren't moving forward, then you're falling behind. So we wanted to make sure that we are promoting this program. Currently, it's state dollars, it's taxpayer dollars that are funding it. We're going to be trying to bring a different solution, funding solution, for next session going forward, which other states have done. And look, I'm a big believer in it. If you get a fortified roof, every insurance company that writes homeowners' property has a filed discount with the state of Louisiana, with the department. So if you get a fortified roof, you can save money. That's the quickest way.
Well, people have a 3-day period to register from 8 o'clock September 18th to 5 p.m. on September 20th, but there's a limited availability, isn't there?
There is. I mean, it's limited funds. And look, you know, you also have to think that there's a limited number of inspectors. There's a limited number of roofers that have gone through the process to be that can put on a certified fortified roof. So, you know, we are making modifications to the program that existed last year, which was created by my predecessor. And one of the things I heard is that in October, November, December of 2023, when they did the program, that they opened up the the portal, if you will, to apply. And within 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, it was gone. It was mm-hmm. taken. And I wanted to look and do that differently, because I don't think that everybody has the ability to be sitting at a computer at 12 noon or 12 midnight whenever you roll the program out. So what we're doing here is we're going to have it open for 3 days. Everyone that's in the coastal zones that can apply for this or be eligible for it, they'll have 3 days to make their application. We'll close that portal, and then there's going to be an electronic random lottery of drawing the applicants, but focused in South Louisiana.
877-217-5757. This will be a lottery of sorts, and Tim Temple, of course, is involved in every facet of insurance in Louisiana, including healthcare. So if you have a question, just be concise, and we'll entertain your thoughts and observations and questions for Commissioner Temple. Now, a listener asked about your predecessor being a big, big proponent of flood insurance, even if you don't live in a, quote, flood zone. Is that a good idea, or can we get by without flood insurance in some places?
Well, look, I think that in Louisiana, we need to have flood insurance, and especially in South Louisiana. We were supposed to do an event yesterday, a town hall, but one of the concerns was that it was in an area that could potentially flood. So, I mean, we live with flood, potential flooding all the time. I would encourage everyone to buy flood insurance. I also understand that the risk rating 2.0 is not working for a lot of people, the National Flood Insurance Program. But that doesn't mean that, you know, not to buy it. It's important because, look, whether it's 1 inch or 1 foot of water, it's about the same as far as inconvenience and destruction to your home. So I encourage everybody to participate in the program, buy it, and I know that the congressional delegation is working hard to make the program better, more affordable, and we're certainly in conversations with them about that.
We will go to the phone lines in just a moment, but before we do, there is, actually two lines open, 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is at the ready, and Tim Temple is the guest. Now, we have talked about the insurance crisis, and I think this is one time when it's not considered hyperbole. It really is a crisis, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, I've been saying this lately that, you know, crisis, the word crisis is often used in politics. And probably not justly so, but this is one where it is a true crisis. And it's not just a crisis, Jim, for people in South Louisiana or North Louisiana or anywhere. It's the entire state. And it's not just property. And it's not just your personal auto or your commercial auto or your flood or your health care or your workers' comp. It's everything combined. I mean, we've had a confluence of issues in our state. And right now, you know, in Louisiana, the average homeowner spends more of their income on insurance than any other state. It's somewhere around 7%. It's the highest in the country. So we're spending more on insurance in the state of Louisiana than anywhere else. That is a crisis.
And why is that the case? Why are we the highest?
Well, you know, that's one of the things we're getting to. You know, with regards to the property market, you know, we had 12 companies go insolvent after Hurricanes Laura, Delta, Zeta, and Ida. We had dozens more leave the state. So that reduced the supply, and insurance is part of it is supply and demand. And so we've made some changes. We've made some regulatory changes. We made some legislative changes with the support of the governor and with support of the legislature on the property front. With regards to the auto insurance, you know, we're looking at those cost drivers right now. The legislature, actually, we're having a hearing tomorrow, and we're going to House and Senate insurance are meeting, and House civil law, and then Senate Judiciary A. All committees are meeting tomorrow. This will be the third month in a row we've had committee hearings on this, and we're looking at the cost drivers. Again, I can't justify why Louisianans are spending the most or paying the most for auto insurance in the state. It's not just because we have bad roads or because our vehicles are, you know, 8.5 years old on average, or 12.5 years old on average. It's a lot of things, but we're having these hearings to truly expose where the dollars are going, what drives the cost of insurance in Louisiana, and we're going to get to the end of that. And when we do, we're going to bring legislative solutions to address it.
And you had that last year, and some of those solutions were embraced, at least they're thought to be solutions, but some of them were not. And one in particular involved the governor in auto situations, as far as the people who file one suit after another out on the roads. You wanted some sort of tort reform. You didn't get it. There's going to be another effort this year. Do you have any hope that things will change?
Look, I certainly believe that we will get the change because we need the change. We need legal reform. We need medical billing reform. Look, we need insurance reform. We need all of that. And that's what we're not just looking at one side. You know, we're looking at all pieces of this to make sure that we're addressing what the true issues are in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I know over years, you know, there's been this constant battle between, I think, the trial attorneys and business, or trial attorneys and insurance. We need to get beyond that and look at what moves the needle, what is driving the cost. And I'm very encouraged by the fact that the legislature has taken it upon themselves to have these hearings month after month after month to get to the bottom of it, you know, instead of just maybe doing one and then, you know, going away for a while. I mean, they are committed to bringing true reform.
877-217-5757. Back after this 89.3 second timeout with more from Tim Temple. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and your number is 877-217-5757. Robin Dow's ready to take your call if you're so inclined, and you can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Tim Temple, the insurance commissioner, is in the house, and our friend in Atlanta, David. Good morning, sir. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, David. Is he there, or is he locked up? I think he's locked up. He's there, but we can't hear him, so let's see if we can maneuver Mr. David in Atlanta. But Tim Temple, another listener asked about health care, and we had this deal that fell through involving Blue Cross. I know that's something also near and dear to the populace of Louisiana. And how are we looking as far as our options in this day, now, what, 14 years removed from the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, look, you know, I've had conversations with Blue Cross Blue Shield, or I guess now Louisiana Blue, as they've rebranded themselves. And, you know, one of the things that they're doing, and this isn't secret, I've seen it, you know, in newspapers as well, in articles, is that they are moving forward to address many of the issues that they said were the reasons why they were considering a sale. So they're looking to improve technology and a lot of other things internally that you know they said necessitated a sale. So, you know, I would anticipate you're going to see a more healthy, competitive Blue Cross Blue Shield. But you know, we're also trying to promote Louisiana and bring in competition as well there too. It's not just auto. It's not just homeowners. You know, we want competition in all lines.
And I think we have more than we did, but the competition has been limited as far as health insurance options.
It has. And, you know, that's regulated at the federal level. And we're a little bit removed from that. We do have a little bit of regulatory oversight on that. But certainly, look, if people are having problems with their health care provider, no matter who it is, you know, they do have an ally, and there are things that we can do at the department to help get things unstuck. So, you know, just because we don't regulate it as heavily doesn't mean that we can't mm-hmm. assist.
Now, I've just got this email from the Louisiana Highway Safety Commission. The highway deaths down 10.5% in 2023 in Louisiana. That's a step in the right direction. But 811 people killed in motor vehicle crashes in 2023, and that's 10.5% fewer fatalities. But that is a substantial number of people dying in car accidents. It also showed an increase of motorcycle fatalities from 90 to 98. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, you know, certainly, and I don't know what the national stats are, you know, what the average is for auto deaths per 100,000 policies or 100,000 people, however they want to calculate it. But I can tell you that looking at the numbers that we have access to, Louisiana does have a slightly higher percentage of auto accidents. It's not outrageously high, but I don't think that that's really what drives the insurance cost in Louisiana. And again, we're having those conversations, we're having those meetings, but you know, we always want to see those number of deaths go down. That's a good trend.
Well, we have an average size state, so if you do the math, 811 people in Louisiana killed last year in accidents on the road. When you times that by 50, with us being an average size state, The number for people in the U.S. killed on the roads would be over 40,000, and I think that's about right. And I said something a few weeks ago that I was corrected upon or corrected about, and I certainly always am on the ready to make corrections. I said highway deaths, basically road deaths in the United States, exceed homicides, which is correct, but they do not exceed opioid deaths. They have now risen above that. That's an amazing phenomenon that is largely unreported by comparison, but it is the world changes, as we know. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, good morning. You're on with Tim Temple. Hi, Craig.
Yeah, good morning, Jeff. Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Temple, I have a question. I carry uninsured motorist protection with my policy, but I was wondering, how much do claims paid out because of that, other the at-fault people not having insurance, how much does that affect rates over a year's period?
Yes, sir. I appreciate that question. I'll tell you this. In Louisiana, our average of uninsured motorist, which you just referenced, is around 11.4%. The national average of uninsured motorist is a little over 12.5%. I think it's 12.7%. So Louisiana is actually below the national average of uninsured motorists. So I don't think that that is part of, I mean, it certainly contributes to loss cost in Louisiana, but I don't think it's a major driver to that. What we have in Louisiana, the bigger issue is an underinsured motorist issue. You know, most of the policy, I say most, about almost half, somewhere around 45-46% of the automobiles on the road carry minimum limits. And as you and I and all the listeners know out there, minimum limits, that doesn't cover the repair cost of any vehicle out there right now. And so that becomes a bigger driver, the underinsured motorist, not uninsured.
877-217-5757. There is still time to talk with Tim Temple on Talk Louisiana. David in Atlanta, I think we got you this time, David. You're on. Good morning,
sir. I'm sorry. Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Temple, I agree with you. We need to get to the root causes of what's causing the skyrocketing insurance premiums. Recently in California, a major insurance provider was granted a 35% rate increase for casualty insurance because of wildfires being exacerbated by provable, observable, human-caused climate change. A couple of years ago, Louisiana had a drought, and there were many wildfires. Now, no doubt it's going to happen again. And would you urge, if Trump is elected and the Republicans in Washington, not to repeal President Biden's green energy programs?
All right. What about green energy programs being a panacea of sorts for wildfires and other climate change issues?
Well, look, I can tell you that if you look at all of the data and you truly, you want to be transparent with regards to the California crisis, the driver behind the insurance companies taking those huge, substantial rate increases was the fact that over the last 30 years, California would not allow insurance companies to take rate increase using any modeling, catastrophe modeling, or any future predictions. Everything was a look back, and any rate increase they had to they requested had to go through a community group, and it wasn't actuarially driven. So California found themselves very far behind the premium curve. You know, what is creating those causes? You know, we can have that conversation all day long. I know Louisiana is looking at alternative sources of energy. I don't think that you can just turn something off and go green. So how that relates to insurance claims, I know there's a lot of smart people looking at it, and I'm looking forward to reading the data as it comes out.
But there are climate issues, of course. I think we would acknowledge that.
Look, I think that you can say that the speaking specifically to hurricanes, which I think is on a lot of people's minds right now, you know, it's evident that storms in the near recent past have built strength. You know, they've had rapid intensification, mm-hmm. and it was during a much shorter period of time. So what is causing that? I don't know. And like I said, I know there's a lot of reinsurers looking at it. There's a lot of catastrophe modeling people looking at it. But also let's again, being transparent and trying to talk about everything, you look at concentrations. You know, I was in Florida at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and by golly, you can't throw a stick without hitting a building. And all those buildings are, you know, multiple units of condos. And, you know, and so there is a large concentration of people. And every year we get more and more concentrated. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there are weather events, but also concentration plays a big role with that.
Well, and we've also had a big portion of our coast eroded in our lifetime, about the size of the state of Delaware. So now hurricanes have an easier time getting to us than they once did.
Well, they have easier time, but I also, using that analogy, I think it also, if you have the reduction in coastal areas, then those, the folks that live there have to relocate somewhere else, and they normally relocate, well, where somebody else is. But
that would include New Orleans. Is it time to pick up and leave, Tim Temple?
I don't think I'm advocating for that. But look, in California, they have wildfires, and all these houses burn down. They're in the middle of these national parks and these national forests. You build a home in the middle of a forest. When it catches on fire, your house is going to burn.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Tim Temple, who's been charitable enough to visit with us once every couple of months, and hopefully we'll continue that tradition. And he'll be back to talk about a few other matters, and we'll start with Paul in Opelousas when we return on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We do want to note that the former First Lady of New Orleans, Sybil Morial, died this week, 91 years old, and what a life she had, and was the wife of Ernest Dutch Morial, who was mayor of New Orleans from 1978 to 1986, and the mother of Mark Morial, mayor of New Orleans, 1994 to 2002. 877-217-5757 for Tim Temple in our remaining moments, and there is still a chance if you call Robin to get in before he leaves. Paul in Opelousas. Hello, Paul, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Templeton. Just a quick question. We compare ourselves to Texas a lot. So far, we haven't been blessed with a hurricane. Texas has been with a storm, with the storms and the rain. Do you see the same amount of insurance companies leaving Texas as we reported that they're leaving Louisiana for the storms? They seem to be getting hit just as hard as we are. So do you see the same plight or flight of insurance companies? Thank you.
Yes, sir, Paul. Appreciate the question. And yeah, Texas got hit with Hurricane Beryl earlier this year. All the numbers I've seen that it was not a large storm for Texas. Now, I also understand if it impacts your home, it doesn't matter who else. That's all it counts. It's large. But it was within the generally referred to as the retention of a lot of the insurance companies over there. As far as I know, there were no companies that went insolvent in Texas. So none of them went bankrupt, and no companies have left that Texas market that I've seen. So, when you create a healthy, competitive marketplace and allow companies to operate their business on the model that they need, it creates that stability. And you and I, as consumers, that's what we want. We want stable markets because stable markets mean that we have choices. And that's what we're trying to do here in Louisiana. And I say that's what we're going to do. We've made the property reforms that I think were needed to help create a competitive market, to reestablish confidence in the Louisiana marketplace, and we're going to see companies come back to Louisiana.
Jeff in the Garden District says Safeco, a top 10 insurer in the state with over 3% market share and almost 90 million in policies, has made a decision to pull out of the state. He continues, the legislative changes do not seem to be encouraging companies to stay here. Maybe a different approach is needed. Your thoughts?
Look, Safeco that was purchased by another company, and so they're in the process, I believe, of just reevaluating their book of business. They have not issued a notice of withdrawing from the state that I'm aware. And if that is somewhere, then let me know that. But look, we are seeing companies coming to Louisiana. We have companies that have filed applications with the department currently to come in and start writing homeowners business. We're in conversations with other companies that are asking about the process. And every single one of those companies is citing the legislative reform that the governor and the legislature supported. They are citing that as the reason why they want to look at and are coming back to Louisiana. So the property reform that we championed is going to work. Florida did it. And it took about 18 to 24 months before they started seeing a change in their marketplace. Currently, they've got over two dozen companies. I think it's 26 companies now have this year, this current year, in the current hurricane season, have taken no rate increase. And another dozen companies are taking a rate decrease in Florida. That is evidence that when you do the property reform, markets come back and competition will drive premium. So that's what we're aiming for. That's what we're going to get. And that's what Louisianans should expect.
Are you optimistic that we're going to dodge a bullet this season? The hurricane season is longer now, perhaps related to climate change. But as I stated, usually if we can make it out of the first week of September, we're in better shape.
Can you ask me that question in December? Look, you know, Jim, I guess I'm a little superstitious on that. I don't want to jinx anything. It's certainly trending that way. But look, like I said at the beginning of this program, it only takes one hurricane to wreck the state. And, you know, we're just going to keep a vigilant eye on it. We're going to continue to pray, and we'll be ready if it does hit.
And I recall after Katrina hit, I remember we had John Spain on like a day or two later, and he said, you know, another one could come, and Rita came later than most have. And of course, that was a deadly storm. It didn't hit Baton Rouge hard, but it hit other parts of the state.
Came like, up the Sabine River.
Yeah. Where were you then?
You know, I was in Dallas when that storm hit. You know, just last week when I was in Lake Charles, you know, on the anniversary of Hurricane Laura. And I was in DeRidder for Hurricane Laura. And I can tell you, I don't ever want to, you know, experience another hurricane again.
Well, you're in the spot where you're going to be front and center if one happens. And over the course of 4 years or 8 years or however long you serve, you're probably going to have to deal with a few bad ones. But I know you're vigilant, so keep it going. And we're pleased that you come on our show every 8 weeks or so. So, Tim Temple, go get them, and we'll hopefully in the next 8 weeks we'll be good and we won't have to be calling on you to come back sooner.
I look forward to next time. Thank you.
That's a deal. Thank you. Appreciate it. In a few moments, we're going to be joined by the longtime sports writer in Louisiana, George Morris, who has moved to Tennessee, but he spent 40 years at the Advocate and at the State Times, where he first joined forces with the newspaper on then Lafayette Street in 1982, worked with Sam King, Dan Hardesty, and he knew Paul Dietzel. Dietzel coached at the University of South Carolina, and George was the sports editor of the Gamecock for 2 years, and he had a connection with him. And then when he came to Baton Rouge, Dietzel was the athletic director. Before we go there, though, the latest odds in the presidential sweepstakes, which we've been following, 61 days to the finish line. The odds of Trump winning have gone up in the last day, 50.5% to 48.2% for Harris. And I think this is largely related to the prediction from Nate Silver, at least at this point. He has Trump with a 58% chance of winning. And Silver is one of those guys, he's the 538 person who has a good track record. He correctly predicted Biden would win last time in 2020, and he had in 2012 Obama beating Romney. And remember, on Election Day, Dick Morris, who supposedly is a good pollster, had Romney beating Obama. But in 2016, Nate Silver had it wrong. He had Trump with a 28% chance of winning, and of course he did win the election. But that 28% was much better than most other pollsters had. So he's a guy who knows his stuff, and we'll see where it goes. But it's going to be fascinating, and it shapes up as a matchup that will likely be determined by the seven swing states. And the compilation of polls in those seven swing states show Kamala Harris in front in four of them. And if that were to happen, she would be the president, although it is very close, extremely close, all of them are within the margin of victory, or margin of error. And not one state is separated Harris and Trump by more than 1.4 points. And it's just amazing that we're this close. But there is a recognition from pollsters based on what's happened the last two times out that Trump underpolls. And that's one of the reasons why Silver is leaning toward Trump as the victor, and of course much can change in 61 days, but if he's under polling by 1 or 2%, then that would be significant in a close race. And as I stated, we will follow it every step of the way. This is September 5th, 2024, and it was on this date September 5th, 1924, that perhaps the greatest LSU football coach was born, Paul Franklin Dietzel in Ohio. He became LSU coach when he was 30 years old. At that time, boxing was the biggest sport at LSU, as he noted. And LSU had gone through some tough times under Gaynell Tinsley. He inherited Tinsley's staff, didn't do very well his first few years. And then in year four, after a 5-5 season in 1957, in which his job was saved with a win over Tulane in the finale, in which Jimmy Taylor scored all the points, Paul Dietzel led LSU to an 11-0 season and the national championship. And a year later, Billy Cannon won the Heisman. LSU was deprived of another national championship when Cannon, as evidence shows, scored on a two-point conversion against Tennessee but was denied it by the officials, and there was no instant replay in those days. And in those days, the championships were determined in the regular season, and LSU would have won a second one. And then in 1961, in his final year at the age of 37, he led LSU to a top-five finish with a 10-1 record, spoiled only by an opening loss to Rice. So I think a good case can be made that he was the most successful coach, albeit short, 7 years in LSU history, and he guided the Tiger program into the modern era. Charlie McClendon had his best seasons in the 2 years after Dietzel left. He was here for 18 years, and after he left, the program hit some hard times along the way, and by the time Nick Saban arrived, LSU had had 8 losing seasons in 11 years. But since 2000, the Tigers have done pretty well with 3 national championships. Not going to win a national championship based on what happened last Sunday in Las Vegas against USC, but Paul Dietzel, I think, should be revered, and I think based on his substantial life, which also included, as George will note, he's followed this too, a stellar military career, a building at LSU should be named in his honor. And George Morris, you knew him when you were in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm sure that was quite an experience meeting the great Paul Dietzel, who was athletic director and football coach at the time.
Yeah, back in an era where that was very common, that that football coaches would be athletic directors, since their sport was essentially producing all the revenue. But yeah, I mean, you know, Paul Dietzel was he was a charismatic guy. I mean, he had a unique personality. Whereas a lot of coaches have this hard-bitten, good, you know, whether it's a Southern good old boy or a sort of a crusty Woody Hayes kind of or Bo Schembechler persona, you know, they kind of had this.
Okay, we do have to pause, but we can tell George is on a roll, and we will return with him in just a few moments with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. George Morris is with us, and there are very few places, unfortunately, where the birth of Paul Dietzel 100 years ago today will be remembered, but for those of us of a certain age, and I was born in the year of 1958, LSU's football program entered the modern era under Paul Franklin Dietzel, and George Morris met him at South Carolina, where George, he's a native of the Palmetto State, and he was the editor of the Gamecock for 2 years. He was talking about how Dietzel was AD and football coach, and he was at South Carolina longer than he was as coach at LSU. Tough place to win, and he was the AD, and he was highly respected, went on to Indiana, and of course was there when Bobby Knight won national championships with the Hoosier basketball team. But George Morris, He was a guy who was, shall we say, a complex individual.
Oh, no question. And you mentioned him bringing LSU into the modern era. And in many respects, not as much on the football field as an athletic director, he brought South Carolina into the modern era. He when he got there, the old Carolina Stadium was small. Of course, it's out by the fairgrounds rather than being on campus. And he went out and he found a couple of rich donors, the Williams and Bryce families, who donated a lot of money, and which is now why it's called Williams-Bryce Stadium, and began the process of turning it into a modern, big-time, you know, football environment. He brought in a lot of money. He upgraded. Well, he bought in Bobby Richardson as the baseball coach, you know, and took them to two, you know, runner-up finishes in the College World Series. Did a lot of big things. One of the things that, you know, that maybe there's people differ on whether this was a positive or a negative impact, but he got South Carolina out of the Atlantic Coast Conference, not immediately into the SEC. There was a sort of a period when South Carolina was an independent. But yeah, he had a tremendous impact on South Carolina and led South Carolina to its only conference championship in history, the 1969 Atlantic Coast Conference Football Championship.
There's a story I'm looking at right now, 1980, from the now-defunct magazine Inside Sports, written by Dave Kindred, who's been a guest on this show, and I know George knows Dave Kindred, mm-hmm. but it starts this way, Twilight Zone in the Bayou. Once upon a time, LSU won a national championship with Paul Dietzel coaching and Billy Cannon running. Charlie McClendon took over and did okay for a while, but Cannon didn't like him. He didn't win a national title, and he lost to Bear Bryant a lot. One day, he turned around and saw somebody that transported him back to 1958. Dietzel had returned, and a former star had Ole Mac's job. And Dietzel had the unfortunate assignment of easing Charlie McClendon out, and it didn't go well. And then the guy he hires, 42 days into his tenure as head football coach, 34-year-old Bo Ryan, dies in a plane crash, and a plane that went down with pilot Louis Benscotter in the Atlantic Ocean, just miles from Ryan's old home in Raleigh, North Carolina, where his wife and two daughters were sleeping. That changed the trajectory of Dietzel's tenure as AD dramatically.
Well, no question. And I suppose it would change the tenure of almost anyone's, either for better or worse, in terms of the decisions he had to make at an inopportune time. I mean, I think it was January. That's not a great time, you know. Late January is not a great time to be hiring a football coach. And having to, you know, just deal with such an abrupt transition. You've already got a staff that the new coach may or may not be fit in real well with. That was tough. And it's funny, I remember that. I was working the sports desk in Tampa, Florida, when just before our first edition deadline, a story came across the wires about the plane being missing. It was a very climactic time and a memorable one.
Well, Jerry McKernan, father of Gordon and a former member of the LSU Board of Supervisors, is quoted in Kindred's story. People dying, a plane flying into the ocean, Dietzel vanishes and reappears, Billy Cannon Jr., for God's sakes. The only thing in life Jerry Stovall ever wanted was to be the LSU football coach. Poof, he doesn't get it. Then poof, he gets the job when Bo Ryan's plane goes down. Eerie, LSU is the Twilight Zone in the Bayou. And it is, George, a time you were at LSU when Stovall was dismissed on December 2nd, 1983. And looking at these photos, Stovall, of course, was a great athlete, and he looked like a football player and had that grim demeanor at times, but a good-looking fella. And he was young. He was 38 when he was hired. And there's Dietzel on the sidelines, who even in his early 50s, well, looked like he came right out of Central Casting. Now, LSU may have a good AD now and a good football coach, but Scott Woodward and Brian Kelly have to be the least athletic-looking head coaches and athletic directors in the country. But not so with Dietzel and Stovall, but that wasn't good enough for either one of them, was it?
Well, no. And I'm probably, unlike you, I'm probably one of the last one who ought to comment negatively on people's physical appearance. But, they were, and both of them had similar traits. Both of them were very articulate, but both, you know, projected, I think, a very positive energy in terms of their recruiting and things like this. Obviously we're talking about Dietzel rather than Stovall today, but Stovall was not put into a position, you know, that was prime for success, in that you know, he was having to, his predecessor of the last few years, I mean, everybody kind of knew that Charlie McClendon was on his way out, and it's hard to recruit in an environment like that. You know, Stovall did really, I think, a great job of recruiting. And so when his successor, Bill Arnsparker, took over, you know, there was really a lot of talent on campus, and to which Stovall deserves a lot of the credit.
And Dietzel was a hero. As I stated, I think a building should be named in his honor at LSU, not only for his tenure in athletics, but he was a bona fide war hero. He went in the service in his teen years in 1944, just shy of his 20th birthday, was a pilot in the Pacific fighting in World War II. And you're the first person, he said, the first sports writer to ever ask him about his military service.
Well, this is true. And, you know, when you think about LSU, one of its nicknames being the old war school, I mean, his exploits in World War II were certainly commendable. He flew B-29s in bombing raids on Japan, including the infamous firebombing of Tokyo and attacks into Korea. Of course, they were flying out of Tinian, you know, this very long journey over water. They had some close calls. One time they were forced to land at Iwo Jima. I forget if it was a fuel or engine problem. And when they landed and he spoke to the tower, the tower told him, "Listen, only go halfway down the runway and then, you know, turn around and taxi back because there's fighting on the other end of the runway." And they actually, there were bullets that struck the aircraft while they were on the ground. So yeah, I mean, he did remarkable, as I think so many of the people who served in World War II, and you know, didn't talk like many World War II veterans didn't talk about it a lot. I had become aware of that. That's when I was writing a lot of stories about World War II veterans, and so it was really kind of an honor to tap his brain about those experiences, because it was certainly a unique time in our history.
And George has a website where he has stories about World War II heroes he has covered, written about, and one of them is Paul Dietzel, WW2, the big one. And he has done some great work, and he got Dietzel's story. And I wrote a column about Dietzel in the current issue of Tiger Rag that's online, but at tigerrag.com. But I referred to him, and I was corrected not only, I think, by George, but by James Minton. I referred to him as a bomber pilot. He was a fighter pilot, and there
the other way around.
Okay.
Yeah, he was referred to as a fighter, but no, he had trained on B-24 bombers, but then when the B-29 was under development, he switched to that. And he may have flown a fighter in training. I don't know that much detail about his aviation training, but in combat, he was a bomber pilot, period.
Bomber pilot. And he was right in some rough situations.
No question. I mean, because of the distance from Tinian to Japan, we could send no fighter, you know, cover, you know, when they arrived in Japan, you know, whatever, Japanese planes and obviously lots of anti-aircraft fire, they were, you know, pretty much on their own. And it was the big leagues.
Now, a listener, and we're short on time, notes of Dietzel's innovation. He wrote this, he wrote the fight song at South Carolina, I believe, that still plays.
Yes.
And he also, it's something he probably wouldn't take credit for today, he was the mastermind of the Chinese bandits.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a less politically correct time, of course, that was based on a comic strip, you know, called Terry and the Pirates. And, you know, so he borrowed from, you know, from that about, there was a line where they said Chinese bandits are the most, you know, something
ferocious, yeah.
Ferocious or something like that. And of course, used that as the nickname for his defensive squad.
Thank you, George Morris. Let's do it again soon. Always a pleasure. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.